We're holding on to Sadiq Ches Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Chamish Noshim Shinis Aruv Lodisehin. If you have five women whose children got mixed up, meaning, in other words, exactly that. First of all, it doesn't have to mean five women, of course. We just, the Gemara often uses five as an indefinite number like that. A couple of different explanations, that Achronim offer why the Mishnah Taka uses the number five. One of them, I think Tosfos Yom Tov says, there's a Mishnah in Kedushin that mentions a case that happened with five women, and therefore the Gemara often uses five in this kind of context. Anyway, the point is that their children were mixed up. In other words, let's say, for example, that these women were all in hiding when they gave birth, and you were never able to tell which baby belonged to which mother. Now these mixed up children grew up and they all married. They're all kosher yidden. We just don't know for each one who his parents are, but we know that all five couples were kosher couples, so there's no problem with that. So now they all got married. Umesu, and now all of these mixed up children died. So the diagram that illustrates our Mishnah is on page 106 of Mara Yevamos, diagram 224. So you have five women over there, where each one of them has a Vadai child, where they're given names over there, David, Aaron, Yitzchak, etc. And each one also has a suffix of one of these five children, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, and Hey. Aleph may be Chana's child, or Rachel's, or Esther's, and so forth. Each one of them now got married, and now they died. The question is, what do we do as far as their wives, as far as Chalitza and Yib? The problem is, each one of them has a brother. Definitely Aleph, for example, has a brother, but we don't know. It might be David, it might be Aaron, it might be Yitzchak, etc. What you need is, out of the five definite children from the five marriages, four of them have to give her chalitza, and then one of them can do yibum. Because now, once four of them have done chalitza, then we're covered no matter what. Either one of those four was, in fact, her dead husband's brother, and that way chalitza has been done, and now she's free to marry out. Or all four of them were, or none of the four of them were her husband's brother. In that case, the fifth one is her husband's brother. Good, so he does yibum.
There was one husband for five women, five wives.
Each of these women had her own husband. What we're talking about.
Okay, well, that's important.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mention that. You can see it in the diagram anyway. You can see here, for example, Chana was married to her husband. They had a son, David, and they also have one of these five children who were interchanged. The same thing, Rachel's married to her husband, Esther to hers, and so forth. Right. The problem over here is not anything with husbands having multiple wives or anything. The problem is over here just that these five children who are labeled over here in the diagram as Aleph through Hey, each one of them we know comes from one of these five couples, but we don't know which one is which. So now, for example, as far as Aleph's wife, Tzila, so what we do is four of the men, say David, Aaron, Yitzchak, and Yehuda, give her chalitza, and then Gershon does Yibum with her. Because either in fact it is Yibum, because Gershon is in fact her husband's brother, or he's not. And in that case, then one of the four men who did Chalitza already was her husband's brother. And in that case, no matter what, we're covered. Then, who Shlosha Chotzen La'achas Ve'echon Miyabim. Now, the one who did Yibum, say in our example, Gershon, and three others do Chalitza to the next one, for example, to Miriam, the Echad Miyabim, and one of them, and then one of them does Yibum, and so forth. Nimtzu, Arba Chalitzas for Yibum, L'cholachas V'achas. So it comes out that each of these women gets four Chalitzas and one Yibum, and that way we're covered. Again, we don't know how many of those Chalitzas are actually valid, because we don't know how many of them are from her husband's actual brothers. We don't know how many of them, because the Yibum is one way or the other. Either in fact the one who's doing the Yibum is her husband's brother and we're good, right. Or he's not, but in that case she already had Chalitza from her husband's actual brother. So it's not really Yibum, then it's a regular marriage, then it's Kedushin followed by Nisir. So that's what the Gemara is going to say, the Chalitzas have to be first, exactly.
And they do some kind of conditional.
No, they don't need a condition. They don't need a condition. The chalitza is just done the usual way. For the yibum, they don't need. I mean, it's kiddushin. You know, he's saying. Kudashously, you know.
You say that.
I mean, you have maimer, right? Yeah. So. Which, by the way, I mean, there is an explanation. In fact, so Achronim discuss the question. Maybe conceivably, couldn't we conceivably have that? For example, that one of the Vaday brothers marries all five of them. Say, for example, David conceivably could marry all five of them. I mean, after all, one of them he'll be the brother-in-law, and the other four will have already had chalitza. And the truth is, in principle, you could, except for the fact we learned earlier in the Masechta that you really shouldn't marry more than four wives, because then each one is only going to get once a month.
Right.
So that would be another reason. That's another reason that Achronim talk about why the Mishnah mentions Dafka five in order to explain why are we not saying that one of them should marry all of them. Okay, so the Gemara points out the Dafka Mechlatz Vahadu Yibum. Now, this only works if with each one of the women, the chalitzas are done first, and then the possible yibum, or again, it might just be a regular marriage. Abo yabumi b'reish aloi, but they can't do the yibum before she's had all the chalitzas, to kapoga b'yivam alashuk, because then you have the problem, she might be a yivam alashuk. If, say, for example, Tzila has not received her four chalitzas yet, and let's say Gershon marries her, but Yehuda conceivably might be her brother-in-law, or Yitzchak, or Aaron, etc., and one of them didn't do chalitza with her, and then you have a problem. She can't be marrying Gershon. Therefore, we need to be doing it in that way. So the Gemara says, "My hu shloisha chotzim achas." So what do we mean when we say that after one of them does yibum, then he and the other three do chalitza to the next one? That means, like we just said, "Lo yitema liyab minu chad lekuru." We don't say that one should do yibum with all of them. Rather, each one should do yibum to one of them. Because that way, there's at least a chance that he will end up with the one that he's supposed to be with. Namely, that way, at least there's a good possibility that one of these women will end up having done yibum. Or rather, the other way around. That there's a good chance that way that one of the men will have accomplished yibum. If you have one of the men marries all five of them, then yeah, there's a certainty that he's done yibum, but then the other four may not have had a chance to accomplish that mitzvah. Whereas if each one marries one of the women, then there's a good chance that at least one of them came out doing yibum rather than that he in fact is the brother-in-law. Okay. Now, the Gemara says, the Gemara continues with another case, which is actually a braisa, and in fact, Tosfos brings that there's a girsa that's supposed to have the word Tanur Rabbanan over here, and Agoyis Habach also adds it. So, Miktsosan Achen and Miktsosan Sheinen Achen, what if some of them are brothers and some of them are not? Ha'achen Chotzin B'Shein Achen Miyabmin, then the brothers have to do Chalitza, the ones who are not brothers do Yibu. So, the Gemara says, my karma. What does it mean? Of course, we know that brothers. What do you mean? What exactly is the case over here? What we mean is Omer of Safra Hachikomer. It doesn't mean that some of them are not brothers at all. Obviously, I mean, to begin with, the five couples, the children from those couples are not brothers. What we mean is if among the children who are the brothers of these mixed up children, if some of them are not brothers from the father, but rather some of them are brothers from the mother. So that would be the next diagram, 225. So basically the same as before, with the difference that of the five Vaday brothers, before we had the five Vaday brothers, where each of these women is married to her respective husband, and they have one Vaday child, and then they have now this one Suffolk child that resulted from them hiding out. Now we have a twist where, say, for example, among those brothers, one of them shares only a mother with some of them share only mothers with the brothers, morning, and some of them only fathers. So in diagram 225 over here, for example, you have Yosef and Moshe are each brothers of they're brothers of possibly Aleph, possibly Beis, possibly Gimel, and so forth. But Yosef, if he is whichever one he's a brother to, it may well be a brother only from the mother's side, because he might be. So you have over here of these five children, Chana had one of them, Rachel had another one, Esther had a third, and so forth. Now Yosef's mother is Rachel. His father is Reuben, who previously was married to Chana, or at the same time was married to Chana, whatever. The point is that Yosef may be, it's possible that Yosef is only a maternal brother to one of these five. So that's a twist over here. Now, if he's only a maternal brother, he can't be doing Yibum. So what the Braisa is saying is that if some of them are Achen, meaning brothers, meaning full brothers, or at least brothers from the father, or Muktsas and Achen Na'im, and some of them, such as Yosef in this illustration, are only brothers from the mother, then Achen Mena'im Chiltzin, then the ones who are possibly only brothers from the mother have to do Chalitza, because they might be also from the father, because after all, Yosef, for example, he might be a maternal brother only to one of the five, because one of the five was born to Rachel, his mother, and we don't know which one, but he might also be a paternal brother to at least one of them, because he might actually be a paternal brother to Aleph. He might actually be a paternal brother to the one who was born to the one who was born to Chana and Reuven. And therefore, so he has to do Yibum to be on the safe side. And the ones who are brothers, who are definitely brothers from the father's side, they can conceivably do Yibum, because once all the chalitzas have taken place, then again, each one either is doing actual Yibum or he's marrying a woman who's unrelated to him, and it's fine either way. The twist is that we're saying that the one in this example over here, Yosef, in fact, cannot do Yibum with any one of them, because any one of them might in fact be his brother from his mother's side, where the brother's wife, where they share the same mother, is an erva to him, and therefore he can only do chalitza. He can't be one of the ones who does Yibum. Okay, continues the Braisa. Miktsasin koinim and miktsasin sheinin koinim. What if among these children, some of them are koinim and some not? So back to the first example, let's say, where you have five vadoyim and five sfeikas, and there's no problems of mother's brothers, because each one of them is definitely a full brother. But twist is, if some of them are koinim, and a koin can't marry a chalitza. So then the same thing. Koinim chalitzin, shein koinim miyabim. The ones who are koinim are going to have to do chalitza only. They can't do yibum. The ones who are not koinim will be able to, after the chalitzas have taken place, they'll be able to do yibum. Because again, it's either yibum, which even a koin is allowed to do, or we're saying they're non-koinim anyway. So either it's actual yibum, or it's marrying a chalitza, which fine, Israel is allowed to do that. So no problem. Miktsasin koinim miktsasin achim na'im. What if some of them are koinim who can't marry a chalutza, and some of them are brothers only from the mother's side, whereas we said they can't do yibum? So then the result is elu ve'elu chalutzin v'le miyabin. Then everybody's going to have to do chalutza. Nobody's going to be able to do yibum. And then the point is that these five women, the wives of these five tarubas, are all going to be, now that chalitza has been done with each one of them, with every possible one who could be her husband's brother, then good, they can go and marry out. There's no more problem of Yuvam Lashu. Umar says, Tonarabam, Yesh cholitz le'imay misafik, la'choyse misafik, le'bitay misafik. There can be examples where a person ends up doing chalitza to his own mother because of a suffix, whether she's his brother's wife. There can be a case with his sister and with his daughter. Now, even though we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, Chamesh Esrei Nashim Poitras Tzareisehen, normally we would say, if, for example, if Reuven's mother is married to Shimon, which could happen, because you could have, for example, that, the mother, we said we can't. The mother would be one of the six arayas that we said there's no possibility of it being beheter. But let's say, for example, a sister. You could have, for example, where Reuven has a half-sister only from his mother.
Okay.
Meanwhile, he has Shimon, a half-brother only from his father. Shimon and the sister are perfectly allowed to marry. That's how you had, for example, Reb Chiya's family was that way, because they don't share any parents in common.
Wait.
If you have, okay, so
let's name everyone. The Bubby?
No, well, here, let's use the example of Reb Chiya's family.
Okay.
The Gemara tells us that there was someone named Reb Acha Karsala. Now he married a woman, and they had several children. They had children Ivu, Chana, Shila, and Marta. Now, this woman herself had previously married Then this woman had previously been married, and she had a daughter named Ima. Later on, Reb Acham Karsala had been married previously, and he had four children from his first marriage. Meanwhile, his wife also had been previously married and had one child from her previous marriage, a daughter. Now, eventually, these two married Reb Acham.
From the previous marriages.
From the previous marriages, yeah. So now, eventually, the two parents, Rav Acha and his wife, married, and they had another child, Rav Chiya. So Rav Chiya is a half-brother to the set of children from Rav Acha, and is also a half-brother to the daughter from his mother's first marriage. Eventually, now, those children, eventually the daughter from the one side and one of the sons from the other side, Ivu, got married, and their child is Rav. So therefore, Rav Chiya was actually a double uncle of Rav. He was his uncle from his father's side and from his mother's side. But there were no Isurim done here, of course.
Right.
So therefore, normally, if you have a case like that, if you had, let's say, if Ivu had passed away childless, then and suppose the only other brother available was Rav Chiya, then Ivu's wife Ima would have been potter from chalitza and yibum, because the only brother available to do chalitza or yibum is her own half brother, and she's an heir to him. So therefore, that's what we learned in the beginning of the Masechta, Chamesh Esrei Noshim, Poitras Tzari Sehem, that she and her tzara would be potter from Chalitza and Yibum. But here we're saying that's true, but nevertheless, there can be a case where because of Safek, you wind up having to do Chalitza Misafek for your own sister. And the same thing for your mother and for your daughter. Ketzad, so what are the examples? Number one, Imoi v'isha acheres v'lahen shnei zcharim. So here we have diagram 226 to illustrate it. So suppose you have his mother and you have another woman. So start off with over here, you have two couples, Yaakov and Rachel and Reuven and Chana. Each of them has a son, Yosef and Chetzrin, and the Lahen Shnei Zecharim. Each of them has a boy. One couple has Yosef, one couple has Chetzrin. V'chozru v'yoldu Shnei Zecharim b'machve. Now, Rachel and Chana were at some point hiding out, and in hiding, they gave birth to two babies. And again, the babies were mixed up. We were never able to. It was dark in there, and we don't know which baby is which. So now we have two more children, Aleph and Beis, where one of them is from Rachel and one of them is from Chana, but we don't know which one is which. But they're two boys. Now, Now, suppose that later on, suppose now after Yaakov and Reuven are dead or divorced their wives, doesn't matter for our purpose. Now, suppose that Yosef, who is Yaakov and Rachel's son, goes and marries Chana. He's allowed to. She's not related to him in any way. Similarly, Chetzrin went and married Rachel. Same thing. There's no Issa involved. So now, Umesu b'loy banim. Now Yosef and Chetzrin both die childless. Now, each one of them, Yosef and Chetzrin, has a brother who has a brother, but we don't know which one is his brother, Aleph or Beis. So the result is, the result is that both Aleph and Beis have to do chalitza to each of Yosef and Chetzrin's wives. So therefore, nimtza kolachad b'achad cholitz le'imayim is suffic. So it comes out because of the suffic that each one of them, Aleph and Beis, he's doing chalitza to Rachel, he's doing chalitza to Chana. One of them is his mother, but we don't know which one is which. And therefore, he winds up having to do chalitza for his own mother. So had there been vados, for example, if there hadn't been a suffic, if we knew that Aleph is Yosef's brother and Yosef is married to Chana, then no problem. There'd be no chalitza necessary, and vice versa. But because of the mix-up over here, then therefore he winds up doing chalitza definitely, and definitely one of these women is his mother. We just don't know which one is which. So that's as far as the mothers. Nimtza kolachad b'achad cholitz le'ima misafek. La'achosem misafek ketzad. What would be the scenario where he does chalitza with his sister because of a suffek? Is again, you have two different mothers, and here let's say so here you have Yaakov is married to Rachel, and then at some later point Rachel is also married to Moshe. Meanwhile, Moshe also had another wife. These two women gave birth in hiding to two girls who are labeled over here Aleph and Beis. Their brothers who are not from that mother went and married them. So you have, again, Rachel was previously married to Yaakov, and she had three, and they had three sons, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Now, so Reuven married.
No, these must be from another mother.
No, that's what we're talking about.
How did they marry?
No, hold on. Well, so the they'd have to be from another mother. They'd have to be from Yaakov and another wife, right? Reuven and Shimon are Levi. Levi, right. let's call her Leah, let's say, yeah. Levi is not, though. Levi is, in fact, from Yaakov and Rachel. He's a half-brother from the father's side to those two. So he's still up for Chalitza and Yibum. Meanwhile, Reuven and Shimon went and married these two women. One married one married the other one. And then Reuven and Shimon die. So now Levi, their half-brother, who is Rachel's son, he has to do chalitza to both of them in Suffolk, even though one of them is his sister.
One of them is for sure his sister.
So Nimsa Cholot V'Achos Misafik. So it comes out that he winds up doing chalitza for his sister because of the Suffolk.
It'd be funny because he would look exactly like one of them, but you can't go by that.
No, you can't go by that. Now, Rashi says that there is a different gear set, a different explanation that says that actually you could have a different scenario that Rashi draws out, which you have over here, the next diagram, 228, where you have as follows. Leah was at one point married to Yaakov, and Yaakov was previously married to, so Leah was married to Yaakov, and they had a son Reuben. Yaakov had a different wife and they had a son Shimon. The same thing on the other side. Rachel was married to Moshe and had a son Gershon. She was married to Osher and had a son Chetzron. They also had then Rachel and Osher, and Leah and David had two girls while in hiding. And eventually Shimon goes and marries this girl, one of these girls, which fine, either she's from the other side and she's not, and she's no relation of him at all, or she's from his side, but she's from a different father and different mother. So therefore, again, it's mutter. And then, in other words, the point is that it comes out that we have to be talking about Reuven doing chalitza to both of them and Shimon and Chetzron doing chalitza to both of them. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation because each one of them is doing chalitza only on his side. There's no reason, for example, Reuven doesn't have to do, in this scenario over here, for example, Reuven doesn't have to do chalitza with Beis because she's not at all, no relationship was ever developed between them. Shimon married Aleph. So Reuven is only doing chalitza to Aleph. How can you call that he's doing chalitza la'achoyse misafik? La'achoyse misafik suggests, says Rashi, that he's doing chalitza to a woman who definitely is his sister, but it's because of the suffik. Whereas over here, it's the other way around. It's a suffix whether she's his sister. So then the expression would have been zecholot for suffix achoise bezecholot for suffix achoise. So therefore Rashi prefers the previous explanation where Reuven is in fact doing chalitza to both of the women, and one of them is definitely his sister, rather than this scenario over here in this diagram where he's doing chalitza to one woman and maybe she's his sister, maybe he's not. The Lashon doesn't really fit that, says Rashi. So Rashi draws out. I mean, so you could still make it work if you had, but there were more brothers involved. You have the next diagram over here, and you wind up again that Yaakov and Yitzchak married these two women. But that's basically the same as the previous. That's basically the same as the earlier diagram. Then you can say each one is doing chalitza to the two women, and one of those women is definitely his sister. Continues the Gemara. Lebita misafik ketzad. What is the example where a person ends up doing chalitza for his daughter because of a safik ketzad? Ishtev isha acheres sheyoldu shteina kevis b'machve. You have his own wife and another woman gave birth to two daughters when they were in hiding, and therefore we don't know which one is which one's daughter. You have Reuven and Kalev. Here we have the diagram for it. You have Reuven and Kalev were married respectively to Leah and Rachel, and they had these children in hiding. So now what is under, you don't know which one is which. Now Reuven's brother eventually married one of them, and Kalev's brother went and married the other. Now that was mutter because either she's his brother's daughter and you're allowed to marry your brother's daughter or your niece, or b'chlal there's no relationship and for sure they're allowed to marry. So now, and now those brothers die childless. So Zechel, it's the Bittim is Suffolk. Zechel, it's the Bittim is Suffolk. The result is that Reuven has to do Chalitza with both these women, and Kalev has to do Chalitza with both these women, Miss Suffolk, even though one of them is definitely his daughter. But again, we don't know which one is which.
It's kind of like the riddles.
Because... So it's a little bit like the riddles, but here everything is Beheter. Yeah. Okay. Since we're talking about examples where we have funny examples like this, where odd examples where we have something that you would completely not expect. You would never expect that a person is doing chalitza with his daughter or his mother or his sister, and yet we found examples where such things are possible. So the Gemara discusses something. So the Gemara brings something similar where you have a very unusual thing where from one marriage you can have many different groups among the Jewish people. So Tanya, how you have Ish v'Isha, po'amim shemalidin chomesh umis. You can have a couple that they have five children, where each of them is a different grouping within the Jewish people, namely like the groupings, as in you think of the Asara Yuchsin, you think of the ten groups of Jews, and then you have outside of them as well. You have Goyim, so and you have Avodim. So you can talk about that they're each of their children belongs to a different one of those groups. Suppose that a Jew buys an eved and a shifcha, this eved and shifcha have so far two children. Now, so far, those children are goyim because their parents were regular goyim at the time. They weren't yet avodim. Only when the Jew buys them, and as we learned earlier in the Masechta, mauls the man and tovels both the man and the woman, l'shem avdus, only now do they gain the status of avodim. So up till now, the two children that they had are goyim. So then, v'nisgayer ech mehen, suppose that one of those children is nisgayer. So far you have two. So far you have two different types from one marriage where one is a goy and the other one is gay. Next. Hitbil on the shame avdus. Now he took this Eved and Shifcha who are still married and toiled them for the sake of avdus, where now they have a new status of avodim knanim. The nizkuk will zelazeh, and they continue to have relations, and now they have more children. Harei can give ukechavim be'eved. Now the next child that they have has the status of an Eved because he follows his mother's status, and his mother is a Shifcha, therefore so is he. Next, shifcha is a shifcha, or ba'ala her eved. Now, if he frees the shifcha, so now she's a regular Jewish woman, but he didn't yet free her husband, the eved. Now if the eved continues to have relations with her, then harei can give ukechavim be'evedu mamzer. Now, the next child is going to be a mamzer, which the Gemara is going to say in a few lines. Or Draisa is following the opinion, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, that if a goy or an eved has relations to the Bas Yisrael, then the child is a mamzer. The halacha is not like that in the end. The halacha is that the child is kosher. So therefore, you wouldn't actually have that example of him being a mamzer, but nevertheless, according to the mayor, you could. So far you have four. And then Shichur Shneim, we see in Zelazeh. Now if he frees the eved as well, and they marry each other, Harei can give Ukechavim be'evedu mamzer v'Yisrael. Now their fifth child is a full-fledged Yisrael, because by the time he was conceived and born, then his parents were already both full-fledged Jews. So the Gemara says, my k'mashmalon, what does Reb Meir want to tell us? And it's a cute scenario, but what's the nafkamina of it l'halacha? And the answer is, he wants to inform us of the din that was Nageya, as far as the fourth one, Ukechavim be'evedu abar bas Yisrael, avlad mamzer, that you should know that if a goy or an eved has relations with a bas Yisrael, as we had in the middle over here where the shifcha was freed and the eved was not yet, and we said their fourth child therefore is a mamzer, that in fact, that's what Reb Meir is telling us, that the child is a mamzer. Because if you don't hold that, then you don't have five different groups that you could have. You only have four. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Tana Rabbanan, yesh moicheres aviv lahagbis imo ksubasa. You can also have an example where a person ends up selling his own father as a slave in order to raise money to give his mother huksuba. Ketzad, yeah, Yisrael lokach eved b'shivcha min ashuk. We start off with, to begin with, that a yid buys an eved and a shivcha from the shuk. So they're already an eved and a shivcha. The lahem bein, they have a son. Now Rashi explains he didn't buy the son, so the son belongs to somebody else. The shichur is a shivcha v'nasa. Well, we could have b'chlal that the son may have even been born before this Eved and Shivcha even became before they ever became avadim. Let's say, but whatever. The point is, the son does not belong to this Yisrael. V'shichras haShivcha v'nasa. Now the Yisrael freed the Shivcha, and he himself married her. V'amad v'kosev kol mechosev livna. And then this Yisrael, the master, went and wrote out a document giving all of his nechosim to her son. So now, after he passes away, and ksuba at her ksuba, this former shivchas ksuba has to be paid. Nimta zem moicheres aviv lahagvus leimiksubasa. So it comes out the son he owns all of his father's nechosim, including his own biological father, the eved. So therefore, he can sell that eved if need be in order to raise money to pay the ksuba. So the Gemara says, "My kamash milan." Again, it's a cute, interesting scenario. But what is the Braisa actually teaching us with this? The answer is cooler to Meir. The Braisa is telling you this to know that this is also part of a Meir's statement. It's not a separate Braisa; it's a continuation of the previous Braisa. And the Avda Metalpli, and he's informing us that you should know that an Eved is considered Metalpalin, or Metalpalin is Shtabli L'Ksuba. And you should know that Metalpalin are part of the Shibud to the Ksuba. Usually we say that Avodim are compared to Karka, but Tosfos points out the fact is the Torah compares them to Karka in the sense the Torah says, the Isnachaltim Oysam and Loresha Sachuza, which are expressions that are used as far as land. So for many purposes in halacha, we consider avodim to be the equivalent of land, which is negeya as far as a lot of things. It means, for example, that if you have a claim in Beis Din where you claim, let's say that somebody stole your eved, then the other guy wouldn't swear a shvua on it, the same way as you don't swear a shvua on karka. Or you have, for example, that you can't do pidyon aben by giving the koyin an eved worth 5 sloim, the same way as you can't do pidyon aben with karka, and so forth. But Tosfos says, in this particular case, the fact is that there's no smichus das. Karka can never be permanently removed because the karka is always there. Therefore, there's a smichus das. The other party has they know for a fact eventually this karka is going to be somehow available for them to get. If the husband or his estate still owns it, good. If they sold it to somebody else, then there's a shibud on it and they can take it away, etc. Metalpalin, you don't have such things because metalpalin can be used up. Well, by the same token over here, the eved could run away or they could die. So therefore, so in that sense, we're saying that we consider them like metalpalin. And the point is that we're saying that metalpalin, the mayor holds that metalpalin on the shubad to the ksuba. So Tosfos and Tosfos Chad Mikamai over here discuss different angles on it. The fact is, Tosfos Chad Mikamai says the halacha is not in the end like the mayor. The halacha, in fact, is like the chachamim that the halacha would be like the chachamim or like the second version in our Gemara over here. The halacha would be that avodim, that you can't be goyva from avodim, it's a Gemara in Baba Basra. However, Tosfos Chad Mikamai mentions a point which you find here and there in the Rambam. When you learn in the Rambam and Sefer, in the Nezikin and Kinyan and so forth, he mentions in a number of places a takana of the Gaonim that says that in all the cases throughout Shas, we're always talking about there's a shibud on karka. In general, there's not a shibud on metalpalin. But the Gaonim, the early Gaonim, made a takana, which was then accepted by the entire Jewish world, that you can, in fact, have a shibud on metalpalin. Historians say, I mean, the reason behind that was because there came a point, the Gaonim are living in the time when the Arabs are ruling over Bavel and most other places where Jews live, and they passed laws to discourage Jews from owning land. They said, if you're an infidel, if you're not a Muslim, then you have to pay very high land taxes. So therefore, most Jews gave up owning land and went into businesses and other kinds of things like that. So therefore, the Gaonim the Gaonim eventually moved the Yeshivas to Baghdad, right? The point is, in other words, that so there came a point, unlike in the times of the Gemara and earlier, where it was a given that almost everybody owns karka. At that point, in the times of the Gaonim, it wasn't so common anymore, and therefore they had to make a takana that there was a shibud from the Talpin. So Tosfos Chad Mikamai. Yeah, we're talking about in the middle of the time of the Gaonim. We're talking about the period of the Gaonim begins around the year 600 of the Common Era, give or take. This takana was done around the year 800, give or take. So in the middle of the time of the Gaonim.
I think that's like when High Gaonim.
No, Rabbi Haigon was in the 11th century. No, this
the
is
11th century.
Yeah, no, this is a couple. I'm sure the guy mentions in his Geras the names of the guy who did this. Rabuna Bray did of something, and Rabibi Bray did of something. I don't remember the exact names, but whatever. It was a takana that was made jointly by the yeshivas of Sura and Humbadista, and then was accepted throughout the Jewish world. Whatever, anyway, let's go on. But yeah, anyway, the point is, the Tosfos Hanmi Kamai says
300 years it took them to move to Baghdad.
Well, yeah. Anyway, the point is that the point is that Tosfos Hanmi Kamai says so. In principle, the halacha is not like Reb Meir. Practically speaking, though, now the halacha is because now we have a shibud and a talmud. When it comes to a ksuba, anyway, that Amram points out that it's a good idea to write, and we write this explicitly in the ksuba that the chosin says on himself, "I'm taking on myself." That this shibud is on everything that I own, karka and metaltlin, even the glima d'al kasvoi, and that's a better way of doing it rather than relying on the takana of the goyim, which maybe not everybody knows about. Like this, the chosin writes explicitly in the ksuba that he's taking the shibud on all his metaltlin and good. Well, then you can do that. Anyway, the point is, so our Gemara is saying that avodim are considered metaltlin, and only the mayor would hold that they're meshubud l'ksuba. Another possibility is the Braise is telling us that avodim are, in fact, for this purpose, considered like karka, which Tosfos says in that case, it would mean that there is smichus das, just like karka, because it's true. They could, like in the first Lashon, run away or die, but nevertheless, that's less common. And therefore, so it's more likely that you're going to be able to collect from them. So the Braise is telling us one of two things. Either that it's following Reb Meir and saying that avodim are like metaltlin, or saying it could be even like the chachamim and avodim are like karka. Okay, Mishnah goes on. Ha'isha shenis arav vlada bevlad kalosa. Now, suppose you have in the previous Mishnah we talked about unrelated women whose children get mixed up. Now let's end in the Gemara. We talked about a little bit where they're related. Or where they eventually become related through marriage. Now, let's talk about, to begin with, where the two children are from women who themselves are related. So you have a woman and you have her daughter-in-law, and their children got mixed up. So here you have the diagram for it, diagram 232. So you have Chana and Rachel both gave birth while they were in hiding. So you have the children Aleph and Beis, both boys. So one of them, Now one of them may be a so which one is now here you have the twist is that you can't marry your father's brother's wife. So because one of them is a mother-in-law and the other one is a daughter-in-law, and that means, in other words, that Chana is married to Yitzchak, Rachel is married to Osher, who is Chana's son. So now it's not so simple. Now you can't say that we start doing chalitza or yibum, because one of them is going to end up marrying his father's brother's wife, one of these two tarubas. So now these tarubas grew up, they married wives, Esther and Miriam respectively, and they died. So b'nei akala chotzin v'loy miyadmin. So now the children of the daughter-in-law, namely in this example over here, Rachel is the daughter-in-law. So her children, for example, Menashe, he cannot do yibum with either one of these women, because each of them might actually be his father's brother's wife, because each of them might be the brother of each one of them might be the brother of God, or he might be the brother of Menashe, and God is his father's, it could be his father's brother's wife. So therefore, because a suffix, whether it's his own brother's son, or whether it's his father's brother's son, if it's father's brother, then his wife is an heir to him. Meanwhile, the children of the therefore Menashe is going to have to do chalitza, we're saying. Oh, and cannot do yibum. On the other hand, the children of the older woman, the children of Chana, for example, God, Chilton, they can do either chalitza or yibum. That's fine. Shesafet Eishesachet, the Eishes Benachim. One of these women is his brother's wife. The other one, because Aleph might be his brother, or it might be his brother's son's wife. Well, fine. You're allowed to marry your brother's son's wife. There's no issue on that. So therefore, so he can do, so God, in this example over here, can do Yibum no matter what. And what about the other way around? So far, we're talking about where the Taruvus, where the Taruvus passed away, and the question is what we do with their wives. Now, what if the other way around? What if the Kshedim passed away? Which the Gemara is going to add, the Kshedim means God and Menashe respectively, who we know who their parents are. The Gemara is going to ask why we call them Kshedim. I mean, the other ones are not possible. We're going to have examples. We're going to have examples later on where one of them is, where one of them might be possible, but right now we're not dealing with that. So the Gemara is going to say that you're right. The word doesn't really mean Kshedim, means Vadoim. But anyway, the point is, so now the other way around, let's say God and Menashe passed away. And so what do we do with their wives in this, in the next diagram, Chava and Rivka? So therefore, Hataruvus Libnas Kena Chotz and Vlemiyamin. So again, both of the mixed up children, Aleph and Beis, where one of them is from Chana and one of them is from Yitzchak and Chana, and the other one is from Chana's son Osher, from Yitzchak's son, and Chana's son Osher, and his wife Rachel, but we don't know which is which. So they can only do Chalitza or Yibum, but not Yibum, because again, it might be the brother of his, it might be the wife of his brother, because Aleph might be God's brother, and therefore Chava is his brother's wife, so good, but it also might be his father's brother's wife, because it might actually be that it might actually be that he's the brother of Osher, which makes him a son of Yitzchak and which makes him a son of Yitzchak and Chana. Therefore, that would mean, in other words, that God is actually his father's brother, and then that would be an heir to him. His father's brother's wife would be an heir to him. So therefore, they can only do chalitza. But when it comes to the children of the daughter-in-law, namely as far as Menashe's wife, Rivka, that one, each one, that one they can do. One of them has to do chalitza, because we need to take care of the Yavam Lashuk problem. But once one of them has done chalitza, then the other one can do Yibum, like in the Mishnah that we had on Sadiq Chesam and Beis, because then at that point, any possible Zika has been removed. And now the other one, when he's marrying, either he's marrying his brother's wife, which is good, he's doing Yibum, or he's marrying his, or he's marrying a woman who's not closely enough related to him to be an erva, but there's no isser, there's no mitzvah of yibum either, but that would also be fine. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Kehenes shenis ar vlada bevlad shivchas. Suppose you have a wife of a kohen whose child got mixed up with the child of hushivcha. So in other words, she and her shivcha were in hiding. We're done with the diagrams for now. So the kehenes and her shivcha were both in hiding, and the children got mixed up. So now the point is, each of these children might be a kohen or might be an eved. So hareilu uchlin b'truma. So both of them can eat truma, because after all, an eved of a kohen is also allowed to eat truma. They get one portion of truma when it comes in the granaries, when they give out truma. We'll see in the Gemara what that phrase means. Neither one is allowed to become tamei lames because they might be a kohen. They can't get married. They can't get married to a kosher woman or to a possible woman because each one might be a kohen, for example. So you can't marry a mamzeres or a shifa, but each one might be an eben. You can't marry a bas yisrael. There's no overlap between if you were to do like a Venn diagram, there's no overlap between the women that a kohen can marry and the women that an eved can marry. So therefore they can't get married. On the other hand, now what happens when these children who got mixed up together and become when they get older and now they free one another. So each one writes out a document that says, if I'm your master and you're my eved, then I'm freeing you. So now both of them are. So now one of them is a kohen, one of them is an eved meshuchro who's now a full-fledged Jew, but not a kohen. So now the dinim are different. Noisim noshim ra'uyas lekohona. Now they both have to marry only women who are roi for a kohen. So they can't marry a shifcha or a mamzeres because now they're both definitely Jews, but they can't marry a grusha or a chalola or what have you because one of them is a kohen. Therefore, they can only marry. They can't marry a grusha or chalotza or whatever. The ein matamin lemesim, they still can't become tamei mes because of the same problem as before. The imnitmu ein and soif ganar boyin, if they do become tamei mes, then they don't get malchus because each one can say, I'm not a koyin. So Rashi says it's asura suffer. Each one, when the eidim tell them don't become tamei, then they can't be saying for sure you're a koyin. You're not allowed to become tamei because he might not be a koyin. the ain and oichlin the truma. At this point, they can't eat truma because one of them is a kohen, but the other one is an eved meshuchra who doesn't belong to a kohen anymore. So he loses his opportunity to eat truma. V'im ochlu ein meshamin kerem b'chomesh. But if they do eat truma, usually a zor who eats truma b'shoigig has to pay back the value of the truma plus an extra 25%. We learned earlier in the Masechta that what he does is he pays with produce, and that produce becomes truma. Here, neither one has to do that because each one can say, I'm a kohen. Now, on the other hand, Tosfos mentions briefly over here and in greater detail on the side over here, refers to a Tosfos and Ksubos, that says the fact is the keren b'chomesh for b'shoigig is not really, it's not considered a regular payment as in like a case where a person steals money and then pays it back or whatever. It's really mishum kapara. So because of kapara, they are going to have to separate out this keren b'chomesh. All it is they don't have to give it to the kohen because hamotzi v'chavel ovarai. So what they have to do is this keren v'chomesh becomes truma. They have to then sell it to a vadei kohen, but then they can keep the money for themselves. Unlike if it was vadei truma, they would have to give it to the kohen. Continues the Mishnah. The einan chokin ala goyin, they also don't get a portion of truma in the granaries because again, each one might be an eved meshuchar, and he doesn't get truma. Now, when they take truma from their own, produce, then they have to separate out the truma, but they don't have to give it to a kohen. They don't have to give it to the kohen for free, because again, each one can say I'm the kohen, but they can't eat it. So therefore, they sell the truma v'adam shalahem, and they can keep the money for themselves. As far as the Ein Chokin ala Gurdon, by the way, Tosfos points out, the chiddush of it is even if both of them come together to the Gurdon and they say that, that each one says, you know what, if I'm a Kohen, then give me Truma on my behalf. And if I'm the one who's not a Kohen, then give it to me and I'll give it to him. Still, we can't because since they're not allowed to eat it, then they might come to Takola. So their own Truma that they separate out from their own produce, there's no choice. They have to separate out Truma, but they're allowed to sell it to somebody else. But to give them Truma from somebody else's granary, that we don't do. It continues the Mishnah. The Einan Chokin B'Kodshim Mikdash, they don't get a portion in the Kodshim. For example, one of the things that the Kohenim get from the Kodshim is the skins of the Korbanos Ola, because the Korban Ola is burnt on the Mizbeach, but the skin goes to the Kohenim. Here, each one is not necessarily a Kohen, therefore he can't get the skins. We don't give them kodshim to offer on the Mizbeach because they might not be, each one might not be a kohen. But we don't take away their korbanos from them. Now, what does that mean? Rashi gives two explanations. First explanation is if one of these two is chayev a korban. Now, the usual rule is like this. When a Yisrael is chayev a korban, obviously he being a Yisrael can't be makriv in himself. What he does is when he comes to the Beis Mikdash, whichever mishmer is on duty is the one who has the rights to bring that korban. And if it's a chatas, then they're the ones who get to eat the meat of it. And if it's an oila, then they're the ones who get the skin of it. On the other hand, the din is, Rashi refers to a gemara in Baba Kama, if a kohen himself has a korban to bring, now let's say it's a week when his mishmer is not on duty. Nevertheless, the halacha is, we learn it from Psukim in Parashas Shoftim, that he can come and be makriv even though it's not his mishmer's turn, because he himself is a kohen. And then, again, if it's a chatas, then he gets to eat it. And if it's an oila, then he gets the skin of it. So now we actually learn it from a pasuk also in last week's parasha, the Ishas Kodesh of Loyi. So now what happens is with these two mixed up children, one of them is a kohen. Therefore, Beis Din cannot force them to give their korban to the Anshe Mishmar, to the Mishmar of that week. Rather, Rashi's first explanation is they will be marked with their korban, and then again, they can't eat the meat or they can't keep the skins, but they can give them to whoever they want. Or another possibility is each one can appoint whichever kohen he wants as his shliach to bring the korban. Or another possibility, Rashi says, is they can hold on to the korban until a Mishmar comes that they're agreeable to give it to. Now, that's Rashi's first explanation. The problem with that is, Rashi says that the din is that when a person himself can't do the avoida, then he himself can't make a shliach to do that avoida either. He himself can't do the avoida because he might not be a kohen. How are we saying that he can appoint a kohen as a shliach? For that matter, how could he potentially rebring the korban himself where he might not even be a kohen? So rather, Rashi prefers a second explanation. The kodshim that we mean over here, that we say, ein noisim lahem kodshim, means that, for example, if a Yisrael has a bechor, where a bechor, behema, goes to the kohen, or if a regular yid has a cherem, where there's two types of cherem, one of them is called cherem koyin, which have to be given to a koyin, you don't give it to them, because again, each one of them may not be a koyin. So, and then the Mishnah continues, the aim with siyin shalahem yadayim, we don't take away theirs from them. We don't take away theirs from them. According to the second explanation, would mean, in other words, we don't give them a bechor, or we don't give them a cherem, but if they themselves have a bechor, or they themselves have a cherem, we can't take it away from them, because again, we'd have to prove that they're a koyin, and we can't do that. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi on the point. Rashi had the problem with the first explanation. How can they make a shliach to be makir the korban for them? The rule is, if you can't do something yourself, you can't make a shliach for it. Tosfos says no, because in this case, if we were to ever find out, for example, were to come, or somehow we managed to figure out which is which, then the koyin would in fact be allowed to do the avodah. The only reason he can't do the avodah is because you don't know which one is a koyin and which one is an eved b'shocher. But once we find out, he would be able to. Therefore, even now, it's considered that he has potentially the ability to do the avodah, and therefore he could make a shliach.
When you find something,
is a different thing. I mean, that's dinim mominus. That's what we're talking about is as far as the dinim of, you know, can he bring his own korban, and is he entitled to bring it himself, or does he have to give it to the koyanim of that mishmar, which is a special din in and of itself. So we're saying right now he can't bring the korban because we don't know whether he's a koyan. But if we were to find out, then he would have the ability to. So therefore, even now, he has the ability to appoint a shliach for that purpose, says Tosfos. And then Tosfos says that also, what we do is that one of them gives it to the other, and then they make a tnai, for example, because the din is, once you give a cherem to a kohenim, then the din is that now it becomes completely cholin. So what happens is, for example, so these two boys, we'll call them Reuven and Shimon. So Reuven might be a kohen, he might be an Eved Meshuchah, or Shimon, the same thing. What we do is, so Reuven, for example, if he has a cherem, of which he declared, this is cherem for kohenim, what he does is he gives it to Shimon, and he says, if I'm the kohen, then it was already cholin biyodi, and I can give it to you. And if not, then I'm giving it to you, and it becomes cherem kohen, and it becomes cholin in your hands. And vice versa, Shimon would do that for Reuven. And the Mishnah continues, upturim min azroyo min alchayayim min akeva. They're potter from giving the zroyo alchayayim akeva from a cholin animal that they shechted. Because again, if the kohen comes and demands it, then we would tell him bring proof. If they have a bechor, an animal bechor, then even in the time of the Beis Mikdash, you would leave it to graze until it develops a mum. Again, you can't force them to give it to the kohenim because you can't force them to give it to the kohenim because hamotz mechavel avaraya. They themselves, Rashi says, you can't say they give it to the kohenim and they themselves afterwards can eat the meat, because Rashi brings that a bechor tam can be eaten only by kohenim. Which, by the way, is only according to Beis Shammai. According to Beis Hillel, it wouldn't be a problem. According to Beis Hillel, not necessarily would we say that their bechor has to be left to graze until it develops a mum. According to Beis Hillel, conceivably, they could make a condition with a kohen. Look, I'll give it to you. You be makir of it. But after you're makir of it, then I want the meat, because once the korban is shechted, then according to Beis Hillel, the meat can be, and this is halacha, the meat of a bechor can be eaten by zorim. Anyway. The noisdenol of chumre koinim, chumre Yisraelim, we place on these children all the chumres of koinim and of Yisraelim. We'll see in the Gemara what else that includes. We'll see in the Gemara tomorrow, Beis Hashem. So the Gemara starts off when we say Mesurak Sheirim Mechola. In the earlier case in the Mishnah, where we had some children who were mixed up and some who were not, and we called the ones who were not mixed up Sheirim. So what do you mean Sheirim? What do you mean? The ones that got mixed up are psulin? We know that they came from kosher marriages. The problem is just we don't know which one is from which one. You're right. The word is not really kshedim. It's vadoyim, the ones who are definitely from this couple or from this couple. Okay, we said, we said that when it comes to doing yibum and chalitza for the children of the daughter-in-law in the last scenario, in the scenario that we had in the Mishnah where the vadoyim passed away and you have only the sveikas, so we said one of them has to do chalitza and one of them has to do yibum to the bnei akala. Again, like we said before, davka mechatz v'hadu yibumi, one of them has to do chalitza and only then can the other one do yibum. Avo yibumi b'dei shaloi, they can't do yibum first to kapagi b'yivam l'shuk, because you have the same problem. She might be a yivama who needs chalitza or yibum and is marrying outside the family without. Then we said kehenes shenis arav chola. We started talking about these dinim of a wife of a kohen where her child was mixed up with the child of her shifa. And we said one of the dinim we said is that they receive only chelak echad. So the Gemara asks chelak echad pshita. Isn't it obvious that they get one chelak? Why do we think they get two? One of them is a kohen. One of them is an eved of a kohen. An eved of a kohen is not entitled to truma on his own. Rashi actually has a different girsa. That the it's not chelak echad, it's in parentheses in Rashi, because not all many scripts have this in Rashi. But anyway, the according to what we have in front of us in Rashi, he has the girsa, not pshita, but rather sakadaitach. Chelak echad sounds like it means a chelak for each one, but how could that be? Each one doesn't get his own chelak. So the answer is ema chelak ke echad. It means they get a chelak together. It means if both of them come, then we give them. But if one of them comes without the other, then we don't give them, because this Mishnah is following the opinion, which we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, that you don't give truma to an eved of a kohen unless his master is with him. So only if they come together, only then can we give them truma. One of them is a master, one of them is a slave. So if one of them comes on his own, we can't give him truma because he might be a slave. We don't know. That's the point. That's the whole point.
How is it that one is the master?
Because we said that you have the wife of a kohen and her shifa were in hiding. Each of them had a baby, and the babies are mixed up in Raya. So Gemara says, "Tnan kamando omer in chokin truma la'eved elim ken rabbeim." That means that our Mishnah is following the opinion that you don't give truma to an eved unless his master is with him, because otherwise there would be no problem if either one came on his own. You'd be able to give him truma. D'tanya. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. So our Mishnah would be like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi says, no, you could give him by himself, because he can say, if I'm the actual kohen of these two children, then give me the truma on my own behalf. And if I'm a slave of a kohen, then you can give me, because I'm allowed to eat truma, because I'm a slave of a kohen, you can give me on behalf of my master. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yosi, we would say that in fact either one could come individually and he would be given truma. So the Gemara explains, why did they have this machlokes? Where Rabbi Yehuda lived, they held that if we see that a person is being distributed truma, then it means that we can assume that he's a miyuchas, that he's a kohen. Therefore, they would have to be careful in such places not to give truma to avadim, because then you're going to think that an eved is a kohen. In Rabbi Yossi's area, they didn't do that. They needed other proofs other than that to determine that a person is a kohen, which we're going to learn about that whole topic, by the way, in Ksubas. We'll learn about it in a few weeks, Bez Hashem, in the second parak.
In
Ksubas, yeah, we're going to talk about it in some detail. So in Rabbi Yossi's place, that within Rabbi Yossi's area, they were able to give truma to an eved, because no problem. Even if people see a person receiving truma by the granary, they're not going to automatically say, "Look, that means it's a kohen." They're going to know it, he could just as well be an eved. Now the Gemara says, "Tanya, Omer Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadik, mi yomai lehe'adti ela edus echad. In all my life, I only ever gave edus one time." And the result of that edus was v'helu eved l'kohun alpi. Because of that edus of mine, they ended up accepting an eved as a valid kohen.
Oh,
so the Gemara says, "Helu sakadai." What do you mean? They actually did. Hashta. Let's consider behemdan shel tzadikim ena kodesh bochum maybe takol al yodan. We know that Hashem doesn't even allow that the animal of a tzadik, that something improper should happen to it. As we have the famous story of the Pinchas ben Yair's donkey that wouldn't eat food that wasn't meiser, or food that was stolen, or whatever. Tzadikim atzmon lekoshken, how much more so tzadikim themselves. So how could it be that there was such a takola, such a terrible thing happened because of Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadik, that an eved is mistakenly assumed to be a kohen and marrying a bas yisrael and creating problems with yosin? Ela ema bikshu lahalas eved lekohen alpi. What he means is that they were going to, but then at the last moment they found out that in fact that he was an eved. What happened? Chazer ba'aswe. How did the mistake come about? Chazer ba'aswe. Did Rabbi Yosi va'ozo ba'aswe ba'aswe. Did Rabbi Yehuda? What happened was Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadik saw this person receiving truma in the granary in Rabbi Yossi's area. So he didn't realize that there were different minhagim in different places. So now he went in an area where they followed Rabbi Yehuda's opinion and testified this guy received truma in the granary, and therefore that would have caused them to assume if this was in an area where Rabbi Yehuda's opinion holds sway, then it means that in fact he must be a valid kohen. Otherwise they wouldn't have given it to him in the first place. But we're saying at the last moment they found out what actually happened. Now Tosfos takes out those the sentence about behemdan shel tzaddikim. Because in a number of places, Tosfos discusses, the fact is we do find in many places in Shas where Tzaddikim ended up doing something that turned out to be wrong. So it's only, Tosfos says, in various places, only when we talk about something where it involves that a tzaddik would have eaten something that's osur, where eating becomes dama bosu kibsore, it would be a gnai that a tzaddik should end up eating something that's osur. But other kinds of isurim, it can happen. On the other hand, in some of those places, Tosfos brings an explanation from a bit of time. It's not just if the kohen, it's not just if the tzaddik himself eats. It's anything that involves eating. Now, what would happen? Because we're testifying that this guy is a kohen, if they accepted that edus and made him a kohen, forever after he would be eating truma. Even if he's not allowed to. So even if, let's say, his master died and then left him, and then nobody inherited him or whatever. So that kind of thing, we would still say that a Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't bring takola to a tzaddikim, a takola that would involve eating something that somebody else is eating something that's also, and that would be mechalal with dusha of truma. So according to that, we can still keep the line in the Gemara, and in fact, that's what we have. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, talking about these dinim of who we give out truma to and who we don't.